Welcome to Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa and beyond, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get notebook, paper, and a pen if you'd like to take notes in this show. First, as is always, we look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. By Jerry Cronenberg, a Massachusetts judge is blocking H&R Block from automatically foreclosing on up to 9,700 Bay State homeowners, ruling that the firm apparently wrote mortgages with, quote, reckless disregard for the risk of foreclosure, end quote. The judge says any lender with a modicum of business morality should recognize that it is immoral, unethical, and unscrupulous to issue a home loan with reckless disregard for the risk of foreclosure, according to Superior Court Judge Ralph Gantz in a preliminary injunction against H&R Block. Massachusetts Attorney General Martha Coakley has sued Block over Bay State subprime mortgages issued by the firm's Option 1 subsidiary. Coakley claims the high-risk loans violated state consumer protection laws. She also alleges that Option 1 charged Black and Latino borrowers inflated fees. Block did not return calls seeking comment, but has denied the charges in court papers. Nonetheless, Gantz's injunction orders Block not to foreclose on any Massachusetts subprime borrower without first giving Coakley's office 30 to 45 days to review the person's loan. In cases where officials find questionable mortgage terms, Block must first try to negotiate a loan workout, then seek court approval to foreclose if talks fail. Gantz's order expands on a landmark ruling he issued earlier this year in a lawsuit against subprime mortgage giant Fremont General. In that case, the judge declared whole classes of subprime loans, quote, structurally unfair, end quote, a violation of state consumer protection laws. Fremont appealed Gantz's decision to the state Supreme Judicial Court, which heard oral arguments last month but has yet to rule on the case. Continuing on the foreclosure issue from CNN Money, as government and industry scramble to stem the housing crisis, another 84,868 homes were lost to foreclosure in October, according to a report released last week. Last month, 279,561 struggling borrowers received foreclosure filings, including default notices, notices of auction sales and bank repossessions, according to RealtyTrack, an online marketplace for foreclosures. That's a 5% increase from September and up 25% from October 2007. Quote, October marks the 34th consecutive month where U.S. foreclosure activity has increased compared to the prior year, said James Sacasio, Chief Executive Officer of RealtyTrack. Moving on to the auto industry, from Dearborn, Michigan, Ford Motor Company said last week it lost $129 million in the third quarter as the struggling automaker burned through $7.7 billion in cash. The automaker also said it will cut about 2,260 more white-collar employees in North America as it tries to weather the worst economic downturn in decades. Ford says it lost 6% for the quarter, compared with a loss of $380 million, or 19 cents per share, a year ago. Turning to the issue of unemployment, from Washington, the nation's unemployment rate bolted to a 14-year high of 6.5% in October, as another 240,000 jobs were cut, the government said last week. It was stark proof the economy is almost certainly in a recession. The new snapshot released by the Labor Department shows the crucial job market deteriorating at an alarming rapid pace. The jobless rate zoomed to 6.5% in October from 6.1% in September, matching the rate in March 1994. Employers have cut jobs each month this year. Initial unemployment claims of 516,000 were the highest since September 2001, just after the attacks of 9/11. Continued unemployment claims are at the highest level since 1983. The Department of Labor reports on weekly unemployment insurance claims. In the week ending November 8th, the advance figure for seasonally adjusted initial claims were 516,000, which is an increase of 32,000 from the previous week's revised figures of 484,000. The four-week moving average was 491,000, an increase of 13,250 from the previous week's revised average. The advance number for seasonally adjusted insured unemployment during the week ending November 1st was 3,897,000, an increase of 65,000 from the preceding week revised level of 3,832,000. Looking at the government bailouts, Senate Banking Chairman Christopher Dodd, Democrat from Connecticut, said today that the Senate lacks votes to pass a measure to provide $25 billion in loans for the big three automakers to help stave off bankruptcy, Congress Daily reported last week. I don't know of a single Republican that is willing to support in the automotive area, said Dodd, who has been working with Senator Carl Levin, Democrat from Michigan, in trying to explore moving a bill. Dodd made the remarks after Senate Banking Ranking Member Richard Shelby, Republican of Alabama, blasted a proposal by House Democrats to provide $25 billion in loans for the big three automakers in exchange for an equity stake. Dodd noted that if lawmakers could not pass such relief during next week's lame duck session, the administration of President-elect Obama could release the money because the rescue legislation provided such relief for domestic automakers. This, however, has led to an analysis of whether companies like GM's troubles should really be handled in bankruptcy versus a bailout. As the prospect of General Motors filing for bankruptcy continues to be discussed and Democratic leadership calls for a rescue package to help the struggling auto industry, not everyone agrees that a Chapter 11 filing by GM would be the disaster that many fear, the New York Times reported last week. Some experts note that while bankruptcy would be painful, it may be preferable to a government bailout that may only delay, at considerable cost, the necessary steps GM needs to take to become a stronger, leaner company. Although GM's labor contracts would be at risk of termination, the company says its pension obligations are largely financed for its 479,000 retirees and their spouses. Shareholders have already lost much of the equity that would disappear in a bankruptcy case. Instead, GM should consider submitting a prepackaged bankruptcy to have the steps in place for its reorganization, according to William Ackman, a prominent activist investor who runs Pershing Square Capital and is not a major holder of GM shares. GM CEO Rick Wagoner has told investors, "The consequences of bankruptcy would be dire and extend far beyond the company, and that GM will take every action we possibly can to avoid it." The big three, car companies that is, have what they refer to as legacy charges that are built into the price of each vehicle. These charges relate primarily to the expenses of funding the pension and medical plans. The average cost per vehicle is about $2,600. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. For the next part of my show, I'd like to talk about some practical ways to get out of all the problems that you're experiencing around you in the economy, now that we've heard about some of that for this week, and to take control of your life and the debt issues in your life, as we've been doing, creating a plan, a program, using a formula to help yourself, and then a lot of little tips on how to tweak the debt situation and income situation in your life. This is really making a comfortable stage for yourself of dealing with debt and building some wealth for yourself in the future. As is always, I'd like to give an important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work theories and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's leading champions for debtors, and I highly recommend their books, All You're Worth and The Two Income Trap. And as all of these programs are built on prior programs, you can also get a recapitulation or review from the archives at www.kruufm.com. Go to Archives, Life and Debt, and you can listen to all of the programs that we have had in the past. In the last few shows, I have been discussing a lot about credit cards and how credit cards can really damage our entire situation financially. And as a review from last week, there were some myths about credit cards, and I reviewed those. The credit cards are a good way to keep track of what you spend was one of the myths about them. In fact, you don't really keep track of what you're spending. You don't see the credit card statement until much too late and you forget. And so the fact is, credit cards make it really easy to lose track of how much you spend and what you can really afford, because you're just seeing it in review. If you had cash in your pocket, when it's gone, it's gone. You can't buy anything. But with the plastic there, you can keep on buying, and 30 days later, you see the mistakes you made. Myth number two, it's easy to use your credit card without getting in trouble. Well, the truth of the matter is that credit cards are really based on company hirings for psychologists, savvy business people whose sole job is to get you to buy and really to get you in trouble. And almost no one can figure out and resist all of the tricks that are programmed into credit card sales and usage. The third myth is you need a credit card to build your credit. This is a very, very popular myth. Credit cards actually are more likely to get you into trouble and to ruin your credit. You have lots of bills, many of which are going to report online to the credit reporting agencies, and paying those bills, your utility bills and your automobile loan, these kinds of bills, medical bills even, these will help you to build your credit rating over time. Fourth point, which is mythical, it is smart to use credit cards because you get frequent flyer miles. And the basic truth about that is that most frequent flyer miles never even get used. And then when you look at the fees and interest credit cards charge, you are usually better off just buying your own ticket. The fifth myth is that credit cards are a smart way to pay your other bills automatically. Well, the fact is that you aren't paying your bills. You are shifting from one outstanding bill to another, and then if you're using credit cards, usually with a much higher interest rate. So you're not really helping yourself there at all. The sixth myth is that credit cards are a good way to donate to your favorite group. This happens for some people that they claim they are helping these charities, but the fact again is that most credit card companies give only a very tiny fraction of what you charge to the charity you designate. Get your money in balance and write your own check directly to your favorite charity, and that will be much more useful for both the charity and for you. And then the seventh and last myth that we're dealing with, we dealt with last week, is that if you get approved for a higher limit, you can afford to spend that much. And periodically, credit card companies just keep on upping your limit, upping your limit. This can actually have a very, very harmful impact on your credit rating, ultimately, because based on your income and other data in your credit report, it is seen that you have too much credit, and then your credit rating can go down. The fact is that credit card companies want you to charge more than you can afford from their perspective, and that is actually how they make money. They make most of their money from people who really truly can't afford the credit in the first place. But we all operate on the good faith principle and moral or ethical idea that we take out a debt and we're going to pay it back. And so we force ourselves to be paying things, robbing from Peter to pay Paul in our lives. And in fact, a lot of times people just switch their debt from one credit card to another credit card, trying to pay them off, and then they land up getting more credit cards and using cash advances, and this becomes obviously a death trap for their finances. They're just borrowing money to pay money, and they never should have gotten those credit cards in the first place. Another point that I made last week is that you should keep a credit card if you are a temperate person who has some self-control, and periodically there is some emergency that does come up, and if it's a life and death kind of emergency, a health emergency, that plastic can get you through. But you have to define emergency in the sense of a real life and death kind of emergency, and not just an inconvenience type of emergency, like, oh, I need to get this thing or that thing. It's not an emergency. So you have to think about that in terms, as we spoke about before, in your basic needs, your bare necessities category, not in your wants category. And by bare necessities, we mean subsistence necessities. And then, of course, if you have a card, keep a card, and you are in self-control, you should also make it really hard to use the card. You don't carry it around in your wallet. You leave it someplace in a safe deposit box, at home, somewhere else, so you're not just going to jump on it whenever you don't have the cash in your pocket. And then even by using it, you should double check with yourself the question, is this really an emergency for me to be using this credit card? The unfortunate fact is that most of us cannot really resist the temptation to use the credit cards, and so it is better, as we have been talking about, to scissor all the credit cards up and throw them away, and that's the end of credit cards for you. And you will build up plenty of savings as a part of your intelligent management of your finances. And the reality is that even if you got rid of all of your credit cards and some emergency came up, you actually can get another credit card very quickly. There are, even with the current economy, plenty of companies still trying to get you to sign up for another credit card, and so you will have that opportunity if it was needed. The whole plan that we have here, this whole program, is to help you to get out of debt, and one way to make it easy for yourself, or easier for yourself to get out of debt, is to just take the cards out of your wallet. Your goal here, and our goal together, is to get you to live debt-free and to really have the extra money flowing into your life, not to pay debt, but to build your dreams and to build a future for yourself, a stability and a comfort for yourself, which is far beyond what you have now. Of course, this takes time, and you can only do it one little step at a time for most of us, but it is a plan that doesn't make you feel stressed every single day dealing with debt. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. At this point, we have looked at the formula to deal with your debt and to try to eradicate it in your life, and really to live by a plan. For those of you who have been following all of these shows, you should actually have the hardest part of this whole debt relief plan behind you now, and you've set yourself up to be able to really build your dreams one little bit at a time. You have already really made the tough cuts to make room for building your savings up to be able to use in the near future and the distant future. So all you need to do is to actually continue doing that and then start reaping the reward. From the prior shows, you have gotten your bare necessities into balance and your wants or fun money spending under control. And now you will be able to take the savings and plan for the future. And for those of you who particularly have not been listening to all these shows, I do highly recommend that you go to the library and get All Your Worth, or go out and buy All Your Worth, which is Professor Warren's book and plan on this topic, and you will be amazed at how much of the knowledge she has given is simple and easily workable in your life. And for those who have gone through the programs, you have already earmarked 50% or just thereabouts for your bare necessities, which Professor Warren calls must-haves, and another 30% for your wants, and that's the fun money, that's everything beyond the bare necessities, and the remaining 20% of your disposable monthly income from your paycheck, which is paycheck minus only your taxes, left over, and the purpose of that 20% is your savings. And as we've seen, that's 20% for your savings was to get rid of the debt for a while in your life, and now that you have gotten control of that and perhaps even gotten rid of all of your debt, everything that is left over in the savings becomes part of your lifetime savings plan. And using this formula, and it's a very simple, compact formula, bare necessities, wants, savings, and we're looking at the savings component now because we've gotten everything under control. Savings is not like the other parts of the balanced money plan. Savings is in this juncture of your plan is going to be something that is different. We saw the bare necessities, the must-haves, which is the balanced money rule. You have to keep that in balance. And as long as you cover your necessities, your place of living, your food, your health insurance, and keep your expenses under 50%, you can take that bare necessity money and spend it whichever way you want. You can have an apportionment between those three or four or five basic things. You can have a really nice apartment and a junky car, or you can have a really nice car and a very tiny apartment or small mortgage like that. If, of course, this fits within the 50% limit. There are some restrictions there, and these are subsistence restrictions, and you have to be really careful with those restrictions. You can't go beyond the 50%. We see a lot of people having trouble because they actually don't have this concept that 50% is supposed to cover these bare necessities. They're paying too much for many of those things. And in the current climate, we're seeing that a lot for housing. But with many people in my practice, I see people with automobiles, SUVs, very, very hot cars with high payments that are really way beyond their means. It seems astonishing to me that sometimes I can get a client who is paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month more for two very, very luxurious vehicles than that client is paying for a home mortgage. Seems a little bit out of balance, and that happens. So people, and of course it puts them way beyond the 50% of their disposable monthly income, and people just have not thought through this, and they are going on some kind of emotional response to conspicuous consumption or some other thing in their life, and it's not a wise outcome for them financially. So bare necessities is really the foundation for getting your whole economic structure together, as we've talked about a lot in the past. The next part then would be your wants. Bare necessities are restricted, then there's some latitude within those restrictions. You can do with your money what you want, as long as it's 50% for those basic values. But the wants is kind of more playfulness, more fun, having some category in your life, 30%, where you can play with your money and it doesn't have to be restricted to limitations. and you can spend your money on anything under the sun as long as you stay within the 30% limit. And there are shows that discuss this specifically in the past. So bare necessities and wants, 80% of your total disposable monthly income, that's one side of the equation. And the third part of the equation is savings. But savings really are different. That you have to follow certain guidelines to be successful with your savings. A lot of people take their savings once their debt is paid and invest it poorly. It's not put aside properly for retirement. And then people just generally are shortchanging their future. You can't just go with the flow when it comes to your savings and do whatever you want with that money. Professor Warren has a very brilliant plan of four stages of lifetime's savings. And this is what we will do with the rest of this show and continuing on in next week's show. And the point here is that having these stages will help you to make smart decisions, and you can make the most of your savings and start building some real substantial wealth in your life, which of course is the opposite end of the spectrum from the debt that you have been building in your life. And from following this plan, hopefully now you have taken control of, and in many cases have gotten rid of that debt already. The lifetime savings plan then is the four stages, and I will just give an overview of this. Stage one is you need to save $1,000. Stage two is you pay off your steal from tomorrow debt. Stage three is you build a six-month security fund. And stage four is the lifetime of wealth creation, and that has to be divided into three categories. One, lifetime saving for retirement. Number two is paying off your house. And number three is saving for your other dreams. And these four stages are designed to be taken one at a time. So again, I will say them. Stage one, save $1,000. Stage two, pay off your steal from tomorrow debt. Stage three, build a six-month security fund. And stage four, build a lifetime of wealth. And that has three parts to it: saving for retirement, paying off your house, and saving for your other dreams. And these stages are designed to really help everyone, no matter what your income is, no matter where you start, and as long as you make a plan and get through them, you will reach the final stage, stage four, which is designed to help build savings for the rest of your working life, and of course, which will help you to enjoy your life as you're moving through it day by day, month by month, and year by year. And you will have the benefit of this stage for a very long time. And next week we will go into depth into stage one and two and continue on from there. And the final tip for the week, if you are having debt problems, you should direct your limited resources to what is most necessary for you or your family, and that's typically food, clothing, shelter, and utility service. Unfortunately, there is no universally applicable list of the order in which debt should be paid, but here are a few priorities. Always pay family necessities first, and usually this means food and essential medical expenses. And you want to always keep these expenses at a minimum. And number two, next, pay your housing related bills. Keep your mortgage or rent payments, if at all possible. Keep up with them and don't let them go. If you own your home, real estate taxes and insurance must also be paid unless they are included in the monthly mortgage payment. And similarly, any condo fees or mobile home lot payments should be considered a high priority. Failure to pay these debts can lead to loss of your home. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, please call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt manageable life.